This is Lennon Mishi from the Anti-Slavery Knowledge Network, community-led strategies for creative and heritage-based interventions in sub-Saharan Africa. We are funded through the Arts and Humanities Research Council and the Global Challenges Research Fund to explore how approaches from the arts and humanities can address contemporary forms of enslavement by adopting a community-engaged human rights focus that delivers development impacts. In this podcast, we discuss some of the commissioned work that has been produced through the Anti-Slavery Knowledge Network and their collaborating partners. Hi, I'm Lennon from the Anti-Slavery Knowledge Network, and we're here in Kenya, Nairobi, with Liz and Catherine. Would you like to introduce yourselves and the project that you've been working on?
Thank you, Lenny, and very nice to speak to you. My name is Catherine Barasa, and I'm the principal investigator for the study that looks into working on architectural design and as it links to healing, mental health, particularly for trafficking survivors.
Mm-hmm. My name is Elizabeth Sitati, and I'm a researcher on this project on healing spaces.
Mm. Okay, so would you like to just begin by telling us a bit more about how the project has been going?
The Healing Spaces for Trafficking Survivors project has been going well so far. Basically, what we are doing is drawing on the memory and experiences of survivors and investigating the experience with space to put together a design framework which will inform the design of centers for the healing of survivors. And we are using various methods to collect this data. They include audio journals, we've used semi-structured interviews, focus group discussions, sketch interviews, where we've gotten an artist to actually sketch out survivors' perceptions of space. We've also used community theater, where the survivors actually act out lived experiences from their trafficking experience.
Yeah, and we're working with three partners, basically. We work with UDEL, which is the Uganda Youth Development Link, a very old, more than 20 years organization that works with trafficked persons, basically to build their capacity and help with reintegration into communities after they've attained some skills. We are also working with RETRAC, pretty new organization that supports basically girls and women, young women, in getting them, you know, back to school and also linking them back to their families after the police has referred the survivors to them. And we have had very interesting findings so far and very interesting experiences so far working in a diverse set of organizations. Lately, towards the tail end of data collection, we've also interfaced with Arts for Change, another Ugandan organization that is working with survivors, basically supporting survivors who have been internationally trafficked and have come back home and require rehabilitation. Our core partner in all this is DRC, the Dream Revival Center, that is helping us to coordinate and link the study team to the rest of the organizations.
Okay, so what would you say have been some of the key highlights of this work that you've been doing? Yeah. I mean, conversely, of course, you can point out what some of the key challenges have been.
The key highlight, and Liz will add, the key highlight for this study is its originality, first of all. It's the first of its kind in Uganda and I guess in the East African region. We are kind of trailblazing or pioneering an interface between design, architectural design, and healing. And so it is unique in that way. The other highlight that the study has experienced is the diversity of persons that we have interfaced with, the participants. There have been people who have been trafficked internationally. There have been people who have locally been trafficked. There have also been children in this whole setup of study. So the diversity of participants has introduced a dimension that is very unique to the study because the experiences have been different. The other aspect is that we have worked with varied stakeholders at different levels, working with the police, working with the different center caregivers, working with health people to really understand the magnitude of the problem, but also to understand what healing is about and how it links to space where the participants are.
Yes, another key highlight or interesting observation has been interpreting the various perceptions that the survivors have into architectural information, because there are such varied experiences of space, and synthesizing that into architectural data or prescription or specification is something that is very interesting.
So on the other side, what have been some of the key challenges?
Yeah, there have been quite a number of challenges, one of them being the whole subject of trauma management, because these are transition centers that are helping people outlive their, their experience as trafficked persons. And here we are coming in with a study that largely requires a description of what has transpired in the continuum of trafficking from the time they left home to where they are now. And so that has been quite a delicate aspect of the study to handle. The other challenge is, again, because they are transition centers, some of the participants had to move on for reintegration shortly before we completed the interviews with them. So tracing within the communities has been challenging. We succeeded, but maybe to 20 to 30%. And so we've had to address loss to follow up by actually getting in new participants, when the data collection is about halfway. We've also faced challenge of expectations from both the caregivers and the participants, the survivors themselves, because the conditions in these settings are really wanting, because a lot of them are new. It's a new concept growing in the country, and they do not have any standards or any guidance or any yardstick or reference point to actually improve the standards. And so asking these questions, we could not avoid but hear the participants asking what next, because they require better bathrooms, they require more space to relax, they require privacy in the health provision aspects and so on, they require larger rooms. Some people require single rooms so that they maintain their privacy because of the age variations and so on. So we have had mixed findings, which we're trying to navigate and see how best to present this in a narrative that is going to contribute to the purpose of the study, and that is to develop a design framework for healing centers.
Any key challenges?
Yes, to add on to that, just the research process as a whole, ended up having a positive impact in that the survivors felt included, and they felt that their opinions and their thoughts mattered. And of course, they formed relationships with the researchers, and the challenge of disengaging at the end of data collection has been something that we are also trying to work around and to figure out how to productively work through this process.
And in terms of the arts and humanities based methods and approaches that you've been working with, what are your thoughts on the utility? How useful have they been in this work?
Our experience has been quite rewarding in working with the arts and humanities methods. And being very specific, the whole use of theatre is not only therapeutic, but also ice-breaking within an area that is extremely sensitive and clouded with trauma, that the participants were able to express, you know, through drama, through dance, through songs, what exactly they've been through. And at the end of it, the participants were quite excited to discuss the skit and to discuss what lessons they themselves have learned through the process of being trafficked. And they did make recommendations on what they think is important both for prevention and responding to the challenge. So that is one of them. The other one is the focus group discussions. I mean, the participants enjoyed the discussion together because, again, it's healing to know I'm not in this alone. And so they reinforced each other's, you know, opinions. In some cases, they also brought out the uniqueness of some of the experiences that they had. But it wasn't difficult to build consensus around the focus group discussions on what next in terms of the spaces that are healing spaces. They've been through the most difficult places before, but through the focus group discussions, they were able to express how those places can be improved, you know, to manage, you know, the needs of survivors much better.
Mm-hmm. I think to add on to that, using the sketch interviews has also provided a different avenue to explore the expression of how they interact with their spaces, and that visually will also communicate not only to themselves but to a wider audience in a language which can be understood across the board.
It ceases to be a purely architectural language, but especially where the participants themselves don't have that language as a way of expressing their understanding of space and how they imagine their surroundings. So going forward, what kinds of support are you looking at, either to upscale or increase the impact of your work, or to engage with different stakeholders and so forth?
Just before we respond to that, just to add the journals, because the journals was a major data collection tool.
Yes.
They used tablets and we trained them how to enter their experiences throughout the day into the journals. As a research team, we felt that was very empowering because it offered an opportunity for reflection and also deliberate thinking about where one is at any one given time, so that when they're in the dining area, when they're out in the garden, when they're in the bathrooms and so on, they're able later on to reflect how they felt and how those spaces impacted on them. So we thought this was quite empowering for the participants. And coming back to the question on how we hope to create bigger impact, we as a team, we have thought about several options. We plan to have very well-selected team of policy makers to present our findings, and with the aim of achieving a review of the standards that guide the healing spaces for different levels of trauma. We would like to share the lived experiences, but also to share what we have seen and felt while, you know, speaking to the survivors. We also believe that there's going to be a lot of advocacy by civil society, particularly, that is evidence-based. So some of these findings is going to provide a narrative that is based on research, rather than just, you know, giving a better foundation for kind of engagement. So we think these results will be used for that.
Listen, in terms of the kinds of support you might be looking to in the future, the kinds of stakeholders you may want to engage with.
I think in terms of support, I'd look at the dissemination of our outputs. And more towards the documentary. I think in terms of the platforms and probably the gatherings in which we can showcase this documentary to have the conversation started in various circles.
Mm-hmm. In addition to that, what is already happening is the centers have picked up the theater a bit, mm-hmm. and they would like to continue using this as a tool for community engagement, community sensitization beyond the study. So already there's been a national program where some of the participants, participated in presenting a play to the public on what the experiences have been and what the magnitude of trafficking in the country is. So we think that there's been some capacity building along the way, data collection process.
Any other key takeaways as a learning points from the work that you've been doing?
Well, there's been so much learning, we must concede, and the biggest learning has been that, well, this is a neglected area. We need to elevate the agenda for policymakers to recognize that there are low-hanging fruits, there are cost-effective interventions that are needed. For example, the police remains central in the whole chain of addressing the issue of trafficking. And because the police is not facilitated, not ready enough to handle trafficked persons, some shifts are necessary, both in terms of the human capacity and the way they are sensitive to these survivors, but also in terms of space where they can, temporarily host the survivors. We've also learned that strengthening partnerships is going to be key, because there's no one solution or no one entity that can fix the problem of trafficking because of the varied needs. So the link between health and education and police and civil society and community leaders and everybody is going to be key. And we hope that a model will evolve on how this kind of network can be institutionalized and people able to contribute and complement the services that are required. We found young survivors in one of the centers who needed to get back to school. And so there was a temporary measure to introduce a teacher who would then provide some basic education. And yet, basically, what might have helped is a partnership with some of the neighboring schools to the center, so that as tracing goes on for these children to be reintegrated into the community, they're still able to access quality education from within the catchment area of the centers. So there have been some revelations that we already shared with the centers, and they're thinking through how they can already build their partnerships and begin implementing the low-hanging fruits that will help the survivors. The same to healthcare. Each of the centers has a facility, small health unit, but the study has opened up the thinking about the possibility of linking to health facilities within the catchment area of the centers, and already RETRAC did that during the study. So they're able to receive outreach services, but also get the kids and the young participants referred to the facility nearby. So there have been some benefits out of the interaction through the research.
Liz, any takeaways, any learning points?
Oh, yes. From the varied experiences and perceptions of the survivors, what I've learned is that every element of space communicates certain messages to you as a person. It might communicate confinement, it might communicate, repression, aggression against you. And so for one, the same element might not communicate the same thing to another person. And so being sensitive to this as designers is something that is very key, and that we'll have to follow through and probably study further.
On that note, I'd like to thank you so much for taking time to share your thoughts and insights,
mm-hmm.
and for being with us here in Nairobi. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Anti-Slavery Knowledge Network podcast, Creative Paths to Freedom. For more information on the work that the network is doing, please find us on Twitter, Instagram, and our page on the University of Liverpool website.